and waited, but their friend said Jerry's.
Well, it wasn't in mind.
The meeting will come to order. Today is a day when we're going to start going through the bills and learn what is in our bills. And so I think it'll feel like the first day where we get done situating ourselves and we're used to sitting at the table and we're going to roll up our sleeves and actually adopt some of the same positions, assuming we can all agree on what's in the House and what's in the Senate that we still want it. But before we start, I just wanted to say two things. And the first thing is, I personally was thrilled, and I'm sure all the senators were, and the staff from the Senate, to see Senator Leroy Stump today. I went into the Senate office section to see Senator Clark, actually, to plan our meeting for today. And there was Senator Stump just stopping in to greet his Senate colleagues. And I got a chance to greet him as well. And so he asked that his greetings be passed along to everybody here. And I was so relieved, actually, to see him because he actually looked better. I had envisioned him, you know, now that he's going for heart surgery, as starting to look pale and weak. And he looked like his same strong self. So I don't know, Senator Clark, if you wanted to add anything that he said to pass along or not, or if that covers it.
He said to say hello, and he said that funding stability is a very important thing for the future of our state, and that he hopes we get a good target.
Good. Well, we're with him. And then the second thing that I want to say is more of a word of explanation, because I understand we had a wonderful presentation yesterday on special education, and many of us House members were not here for it. And we said right when we left, but maybe it didn't quite carry through with the whole afternoon. Representative Mariani and I had to go over to Ways and Means to pass the tax bill where our votes were needed for to make sure we can get that good funding target. Representative Fritz had a bill to present on her veterans bill and her suicide prevention bill, and then had constituents who had driven up from Faribault who were waited for her for 2 hours, and finally she had to leave at the end to go and see them. Representative Slawick was called in to meet with Commissioner Segrin, and so she felt she had to go and do that, et cetera, et cetera. And then we had a caucus where we had the governor from Arizona talking, amongst other things, on education issues, and she was a kind of our surprise guest, so our speaker wanted some of us education people to be there to talk with her. So we apologize, though, for missing most of the hearing, and that was unfortunate, and we hope that it won't happen again. But you never know around here where we all have so many calls on our time. But I just wanted to let everyone know in the room, including the senators who gave the presentation, it was in no way intended to diss anybody who was presenting or the topic. And we feel very strongly about special education funding as well, and have over $100 million for this in the House bill. And if we can get a large enough target and spend more on it, we agree with the Senate that it is a bill that needs to be paid. And we're willing to work on that with others. I did have a chance to talk to many of the presenters and let them know that I wished I could hear them. And the good thing is the House did have two hearings on special education, and I would say over half of the people testifying yesterday that we did have the opportunity to hear, including that great student who we were happy to hear a second time who was here. They testified in the House as well. At our hearings on special education.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Clark.
And I appreciate that. I think and we've talked about this a little bit. We had no idea that people were going to be gone, and when we planned, and I think we actually heard some new things yesterday ourselves, even though we spent all session on this topic. So I would encourage people, because it was televised, those of you who can be there, I would, even if you fast forward through parts that you think you might have heard, the presentation that relates to the charts, I think there's some information that may help us as we move on. I know that Senator Rommel has come up with some different ways of helping us think about it, and because it frankly is the vast bulk of the Senate bill, it really is important to us that if you weren't able to be here, that you got a chance to look. So I encourage people who couldn't to go look at it, and want to again thank Senator Rommel and those who had taken the time to do that.
Thank you very much. And Senator Rommel, if you want to take 3 or 4 minutes and give us, you know, some of the points that you think we might not know, you know, I'd be happy to entertain that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I don't know if it's really possible to do that
I have my notes. I get a little worked up, and it would it's worth more than a couple minutes. I'd be glad to sit down though with you and go through my feelings on it.
Thank you very much. Well, you could if you want to, but I realize that was yesterday's hearing, and we should do our own homework, make up on our own time. So thank you very much. Well, for today then, we are going to, like I said, start going through the bill. We did go through the Senate's spreadsheet yesterday, and then today we know you only have the one bill, but the House spreadsheet, which is our optimistic one, we know you're optimistic with us, along with Senator Stump, we have the opportunity to go through what we included in our House spreadsheet as far as if we should be so lucky as to get both bills in our target. So I've asked Mr. Crow through that. Yes.
It is important from the Senate side that I reinforce that we are not bringing that bill into this conference committee. So, I mean, you're talking about another bill, and that's fine, but I'm supposed to, every time it comes up, remind us that bill has not been in front of this committee and that we will not be going into those details from the Senate side until and unless it comes in.
And Senator Clark, thank you for that clarification. We know that that's your leadership voice talking, and we also join you in the optimism that eventually, though, we'll get that money in this bill. And we also need to remind you every time you say that we do have all this in our House bill. So that is also here at the table. We don't have two bills. We have one. We have funded special education along with the things that you have in your other bill. So luckily for all of us, we can discuss them and prepare for that lucky day when we get all the money here for things like early childhood and money on the formula. And we don't believe we're limited just to discussing the money bill that the Senate has half the amount of money and hence very heavy on special ed. We have special ed and early childhood and money on the formula and a host of other things that we'll go through as we do the side-by-sides. We are not in any way accusing you of not being for those things. We know you are, and you've even been authors of some of those great bills. And so we know that that you're for all those things, too, and it's just a matter of all the things we go through around here. We think you are making a very good point that we join you with, actually, for the governor, and that is that he needs to make sure that we have some more funding than what he has put forward. And we have to, for our global targets here at the Capitol, we have to have some extra taxes, and they involve property tax relief, as we have in our House bill and in your bill. They involve education funding. So we know that we're talking mainly to the governor when we have all these logistical discussions and not to each other. And so we're fine with whatever you have to go through to get that message across, and we will have both messages here. Senator Salzman.
Yes. On the point of special ed, Madam Chair, because I think you missed the point of our presentation yesterday, the Senate, except for several people who are in and out, and Representative Kaidegerken, thank you for being here the whole time.
And Representative Peterson.
Was that...
and Representative Fritz, actually, too.
Yes, but the point is that in the Senate proposal, what we need to think about is that this is not more money to fund more special education services. It is restoring dollars that have been borrowed or taken from the general education formula. And I think for some of you who have been in the legislature, you know what happened in 2003, and that was that we balanced the state budget by not paying the special education bill. And yet those services had to continue to be funded. And what happened and where the money come from? It came from kids in regular classrooms. And so when we talk about honesty, in budgeting, I think we need to be honest that this is not just funding special ed, that this is about restoring dollars to the formula. And we also had a long discussion yesterday about how that when we are through with this session, it's not as glamorous to talk about we funded special ed. It's a lot it's a lot prettier to talk about putting money on the formula, but we also had a wonderful presentation from Senator Rummel about, you know, and we heard from superintendents who, when they got the 4%, where did it go? It went to pay the special ed bill. So I think that I just want to clarify again that we've asked that when we talk about it, it's not just funding more special ed. It is restoring dollars to the formula. So that was one thing that I think that was the most important point made yesterday in our explanation, is that it's lowering the cross subsidy. And that is one thing I am getting emails from many, many people during the PS Minnesota and during the Alliance for Student Achievement Day, during the virtual rally. What did I hear? People were talking about, you know, putting those dollars back on the formula and buying down the cross subsidy. So I just want to make that point before we say that all the Senate does with our target is buy more special ed. We're restoring dollars to the formula. And thank you.
Thank you, Senator Salzman. You know, that is, I'm glad you brought that up, because actually we do know that. That wouldn't have been part of the new information that we could hear from Senator Rummel of what Senator Clark didn't know from yesterday, because I'm sure she knew that before yesterday as well. And so do we, because we had our hearings on that. We're well aware of that. We were here in 2003, when those caps were enacted. We voted against them. I never served on a conference committee, Senator Salzman, as you know, because you were here lobbying for education. You never saw me sitting at this table in the last 8 years, because I never voted for the Republican bills. And if you don't vote for them, you tend to not get on the conference committee. So we did not support those things. We were kicking and screaming and not for them. We understand that very well. We've been making that case in our body as well. But I do think there is confusion after the hearing yesterday in the public. And I don't know if any of the special education advocates are listening or not, but I've been hearing from a lot of special education families who are getting false hopes from all the discussion on special education, because they don't understand what you just said. They think we are talking about more money. And I've heard from families involved in ARC. It's quite clear they got an action alert from the ARC group and from autism advocacy groups. And they are sincerely lobbying for the Senate bill, talking to the House members, sometimes in a really strong way. And they think that there is going to be new money for them. And they see that there is not enough money for them. And they are lulled into thinking that we are talking about more money for special ed, when you're absolutely right. We're just talking about paying the bill that the state and the federal government have not paid, but it really won't be more money for the families we're hearing from. It will just be filling in local dollars with state dollars. And then the money that's freed up will be used for other things, and it will not be special ed. And we need to get that word out more clearly. So I'm glad you brought it up again today. All right. With that, unless there's any other points you think we missed from yesterday that we'd be happy to discuss, we'll go on to the staff then. And we do have our staff have a variety of things, and including also, I know, Representative Slawick with family things today. And my theory on it, and I suspect knowing your background, it's the theory of the Senate chair as well, that if members or staff have things for families, you always must go to them. I said, I have a daughter who's 31 years old right now, but when she was in kindergarten, she was in a program, and I went off and accepted a League of Women Voters Award for myself. And she doesn't ever forget and remind and remind and remind. So for those of you who are younger than I and you have things with family, or even if my 88-year-old mother would have a birthday or something, I would still know that and go. We always need to attend our family members' conferences and plays and concerts and all of those things. So we have two staff people that have to do that today. Representative Slawick has her one of her children's conferences. So we're going to go through the spreadsheet with Mr. Crow with any differences because of the two bills, the one bill, rather, that we have, rather than the two bills. And then we're going to go through the articles. We're going to save Article 2 till the very end, because Ms. Larson will be here at the very end. She's honorably decided to do late duty because our fiscal staff are the ones with the children's commitments. And then, so we'll go to Article 2 at the very end. And if anybody on your side has any reason to go to a family event, now's the time to speak up. Nothing. Okay.
I think we're here.
Okay. So it's Article 1, and then we'll skip Article 2, and we'll proceed forward. But first, Mr. Crow, the spreadsheet.
Madam Chair and members, I would ask you to look at the House Appropriation Tracking Spreadsheet that's dated 4/24/07 in the upper left-hand corner at 4/44. There are eight lines that the House Chair has asked that we highlight the differences between House File 6 and Senate File 1611 and 1024. And those are tracked on this spreadsheet on line 14. The formula allowance we've talked a bit about already, and the House bill is 3.3% at $441 million for the biennium. The Senate File 1611 includes 2% per year on the basic formula at a cost of $300 million approximately, for a rough difference of about $150 million during this biennium. There's also a reduction to general education aid on line 37 that's in Senate File 1024 that amounts to about $1 million per year starting in 2009 and is related to taconite production taxes and some changes being made in that bill. That's carrying the similar to the changes that occur with the on the House side in the permanent school fund. Something that affects the general education appropriation is tracked on the education tracking sheet. Then there are a couple of provisions that are linked to formula increases, and those are on lines 51 and 52, where the non-public pupil aids are adjusted to account for a higher formula amount. So the House bill has an additional $2.23 million in those two lines. The Senate bill with the smaller formula allowance adds about $1.5 million in those two lines. Similarly, on line 79, tribal contract schools, the funding for those schools is linked to the basic formula amount. So the House has an additional $123,000, where the Senate has an additional $81,000 in Senate File 1611. Then the next change, you have to flip another page to page 4. Senate File 1611 includes some early childhood scholarships. And the administration of those scholarships is on lines 207 and 208 in the House tracking sheet for the Department of Education and the Department of Human Services. So you'll see $2.5 million for administration on those two lines for the scholarships. And the scholarships, and then on line 209, there's a $100,000 study for all-day kindergarten facilities in Senate File 1611 that's tracked on this sheet. Then the scholarships themselves for early childhood are on the next page on line 260, where you see the $54 million in starting in fiscal 09 and the $200 million in the tail for early childhood scholarships. The House does have a couple of scholarship programs that we can talk about when we're going through the language side by side in a little more detail. So combining all of the House, all of the Senate files, and comparing that with House File 6, on line 291, for all fiscal years, you see that the House bill adds about $945 million in additional revenue over the base. The Senate bills combined add about $923 million. So the Senate position, including all of those different bills that are included on this tracking sheet, amounts to about $17 million below the House bill.
Senator Clark.
Madam Chair, I think the House has made a very good point, which was reflected in our request earlier this week. I think you'll find on the side-by-sides that it only includes 2095. At the moment, what we're bringing to the table is $498 million. So let's keep talking to the governor.
Senator Clark, we're happy to do that, and we're glad to hear you make that point all the time, and we're glad to make the point that the House brought the money to the table. But the governor needs to help out, because I care very deeply about the other finance bills in the legislature. So just because we got ours in our bill doesn't mean all the committees did. And we care about property taxes and everything else. So keep making that point, please. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there an indication for any one-time money?
Senator Wieger, we do have one-time money in this bill, mostly in technology.
And could that be highlighted?
Senator Wieger, Mr. Crow.
Thank you.
He's pulling up his one-time file.
Mr. Chair, and or Madam Chair and members, both the House and Senate bills have one-time money in them, and it takes a while to get across the street to the files. I just, and if it doesn't soon, we can just go through the spreadsheet.
Mr. Nauman?
Madam Chair, I know that the Senate has done a quick analysis of both years and is showing about $27 million in one time for the House. Is that about right, Mr. Crow?
No, Madam Chair, the House bill includes $29 million in 2009 alone in technology funding. That's one time. And then there are quite a few other appropriations. So,
maybe we'll wait for the connection.
The file across the street.
There we go.
While he's doing that, I'm sure people around this table honed in on the article in the paper today on the trouble with the limited English proficiency online testing. Representative Swales forwarded some actual information ahead of the press from actual teachers in her school talking about those problems. And so technology is great, but sometimes.
Okay, Madam Chair and members. On the House side, the total is including some money that's partially one time. The total is about $70 million. If you look, you want to start on line 56 or 57 of the spreadsheet that was just handed out to you. Both the House and the Senate have one-time money for the Browns Valley School District for declining pupil aid. That is for 08 and 09 only. And if you look on line 59, the Senate has $500,000 of one-time money for the Red Lake School District for declining pupil aid. And if you look on line 58, the House has $100,000 of one-time money for the McGregor School District. If you look on line 61, the House has one-time money for the Education Finance Task Force. And on line 62, the Senate has one-time money for the Education Finance Study. And also on line 63, the Senate has one-time money for an adjustment related to the consolidated levy. Then the next, if you look on line 91, both the House and Senate have one-time money for early reading intervention. The House $1 million, the Senate $900,000. Then on line 100, the House has one-time money for the Office of Educational Accountability at the University of Minnesota. And on line 101 and 102, portions of those appropriations are one time. The 21st Century High Schools, of that additional money in 08-09, of the $8.8 million, a portion, a little over $1.5 million or $2 million is one time. And then on line 102, the Minnesota Teacher Development, a portion of that $9 million is one time, actually the bulk of that, so about $8 million of that, $7.5 million of that appropriation is one time. Then in the Senate bill, if you look on line 104, line 104, professional teaching standards is one of the items that's included in the House Teacher Development Appropriation. That's one-time money in the Senate bill. And line 105, the Libre Academy, is one-time money in the Senate bill. And on line 107, the Mandarin Chinese Project is one-time money in the Senate bill. Then in Article 3 on line 133, in the House bill, there's a task force that has $20,000 of one-time money. In addition, both bills on line 158 have funding for Eden Valley Watkins for their mercury spill cleanup. That's one time. And both bills on line 154 have funding for the Red Lake School District. That's one time. The House bill has the technology money on line 156. That's one time. And then the next one-time money is if you go, I think I mentioned the technology task force on line 157. Then on line 167, the Plainview School District money for their ECFE and school readiness account penalties is one time, the $17,000. And then on line 175, the Hennepin County Minneapolis Library Systems merger money is also one time. And then on lines 200 through 202, the rulemaking funding at the Department of Education is all one time. Then if you move to early childhood funding, lines 247 and 248 for the early childhood hubs and scholarship demonstration project is one-time money. Lines 251 for LifeTrack Resources and 252 for the Minnesota Learning Resources Center are one-time money. Then after-school community learning grants are on line 269. Those are one-time in the House bill. Line 270 with the Youth Healthy Development Grants is one-time. 276 GED test for the homeless is one-time. And 273, both bills have one, or 277, both bills in the base have one-time funding for adult literacy grants. And then on line 323 in the TANF fund, the House bill has one-time money for early childhood scholarships. And back on line 209, Senate File 1611 has one-time money of $100,000 for the all-day kindergarten facilities assessment. And then in the House bill, there are three provisions. The base telecommunications access, which is on line 150. A portion of it is one time, and a portion of it in the Senate bill is one time. Line 217, a portion of the State Academy's campus security system, the startup cost is one time. And the early childhood targeted teacher training is partially one time in the House bill. Drops from 155 in the first year to 70,000.
Lines are?
That is line 246.
Okay. All right.
And I think that's everything.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Crow. Senator Wieger, any other questions on one-time funding, or did that answer your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At line 101, the 21st century high schools for AP, et cetera, I believe you said it was partially one time. Could there be more elaboration on that?
Mr. Chair, when we get to the, or Madam Chair and Ms., Senator Wieger, when we get to the riders, you'll see a little more detail on what's one time and ongoing, but there are half a dozen programs, actually probably 8 or 10 programs in that appropriation, and five of them, the alternative school calendar pilots, professional teacher licensure, quantum opportunities, world languages, and the Indigenous Language Board are all one-time appropriations, and then the balance is ongoing funding.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody have any questions or comments on the spreadsheet before we go to the side-by-side?
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Senator Crow,
can you, Mr. Crow, can you remind us of the total again?
Madam,
Mr. Crow.
Chair and members.
79?
69 million is, I believe, what I said. One-time funding. I'm trying to look for it on the computer. I forgot to put it on paper.
that strange thing, paper.
Madam Chair, it's an easier file in front of you, right?
Right. Yeah, $69 million, and if you kind of want big chunks, the biggest piece is $30 million on the technology funding, $10 million in the teacher development. That's one time. Actually, think of $40 million as one time on telecommunications, because it's both pieces. Yeah. The new telecommunications and the fully funding of the existing prorated formula is one time. So really about 40 of that 70 is in telecommunications, and then there's about 10 on the teacher development and 5 each in the after-school learning grants and the Hennepin County Library merger. So really it's those four appropriations that make up the bulk of the one-time funding. And I would just caution members on translating that into a one-time target or some sort of, because the House bill did not have a one-time spending target, because there are appropriations in the House bill that start in the second year that have a different impact on the tails that are balanced by some one-time spending over here. So there wasn't really a target to hit of a certain dollar amount. It's just the tail target drives decisions depending on what you do in the first and second year of your ongoing appropriations.
Senator Clark, and then Representative Slawik, and then Representative Fritz. Senator Clark.
It may well be to that point that we end up having a one-time, a permanent, and a tail target by the time we get through of all this, so we probably will need to figure that out. But I was just wondering, Mr. Nauman, can you also remind us what the Senate one-time money was?
Mr. Chair and members, the Senate's been carrying about, I think, $5.3 million in one-time money. Mr. Crow highlighted most of those line items.
We'll take all the money we can. That's right. It's great, but we'll take one-time money too.
Madam Chair, and there's $1.3 million that's in the base and the House and the Senate that is one-time funding that is not included in the 5.3 that Mr. Nauman just said, but is included in the House 69 or 70 million. So that there's a base one-time appropriation that's in. So really, it's either 6.3 or 68 for comparison purposes.
Okay. Madam Chair, maybe this is a question for Mr. Nauman. A question about the TANF funding. We did use some TANF funding in our bill. Will you be using any in the Senate?
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair and Representative, no, there is no TANF appropriations in the Senate bill.
Okay. Madam Chair? So there will be no TANF target then, I assume?
Representative Slawik, that will be up to leadership. And okay. I don't know if Senator Clark is prepared to comment on that. If you have had any discussions of that nature yet, or we'll just have to wait and see.
Madam Chair and Representative Slawik, we have not had that discussion, but based on past history, I would think it would be highly unlikely that we would get TANF money. It traditionally all winds up in Health and Human Services.
Okay, thank you.
For child care, except.
If we're lucky on this committee, we can at least find out if leadership has discussed things yet or not, and if we can find out or not, that'll be another question.
Madam Chair, what I can say, whether we've discussed them, I will.
Yeah, we understand how that goes. Representative Fritz.
Madam Chair, I had a question on line 217 and 218 on the Faribault Academies. I understand that the one-time money for the campus security system, 200, and then on the, I thought that the computer technology also was one-time money. I didn't hear that.
Mr. Crow.
For clarification.
Madam Chair and Representative Fritz, the money that's in the House education bill for computer technology and staff is ongoing money. It's not one-time. There's a small agency's technology appropriation in this House state government finance bill that is a one-time appropriation and would include the state academies as a small agency.
Thank you.
All right. Seeing no other people on the list, we'll go to the side-by-sides. So we'll start out with Article 1, and then, like I said, we'll go to Article 3 after that. Article 1, this is a Mr. Crow and Mr. Nauman show, right? Mr. Strom or so who's starting?
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's
Strom.
Both a summary and side-by-sides of the language in your folders and your packets. You can work from either, whichever you find more convenient. The House bill this year is lined up on the left, and the Senate bill is on the right side. For purposes of this summary, the House file is the fourth engrossment of House File 6, which is what passed the House floor, and only Senate File 2095. You will see references throughout the summary, but not in the language itself, to other Senate files, including those where some of the transportation amendments are carried. But you'll see, just for purposes of the side-by-side language, just Senate File 2095 on the right and House File 6 on the left. Madam Chair, members, will try and make this as quick as possible for you. We'll give you a little more time on the sections that are more than just technical, perhaps, if you have questions, but otherwise we'll try to go at a pretty good speed. The way the summary is lined up, on the left is the House, on the right is the Senate, in the middle is a column where we've tried to describe the differences, if any, or whether they're the same or whether there's no comparable provision. The very first provision, House Article 1, Section 1, has to do with the state general fund budget priorities. This is a section where 2 years ago we put in the payback for the shift language. There's a cross-reference error here. Both bills have the identical language, Madam Chair, that correct that cross-reference.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Strom. Ms. McQuaid, do you have anything to add to that? Or
Madam Chair, I believe Mr. Nauman's going to take Article 1.
Oh, boy. You know, I'm going to have trouble knowing who's doing what, so you guys are just going to have to type up. Mr. Nauman. Are you on section Article 1, Section 1?
Madam Chair, Mr. Strom did fine on
that. Okay, when they're the same, maybe we'll just have one or the other one do it. Okay, well then, just for the purposes of everyone knowing what we're doing at the other conferees, Senator Clark and I discussed this morning, and we consulted with the staff, and today, unless there's anything anybody wants to throw out, we are going to move in to our first draft of the conference committee report all the same. So we figure if the Senate has it and the House has it and nobody, the staff hasn't come up with any reason why we didn't do the right thing, we thought we might as well just get those. The more we can put into the bill that the staff can work on, the better off we are, that they don't have to be here all night when we go home at the end of when we really start marking up fast. So having said that, I will move Article 1, Section 1. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and Article 1, Section 1 is adopted. Senator
Chair,
Clark.
Just really quick to the point that you said, Madam Chair, it might be a good idea if anybody in the audience has an issue with anything that we're going to adopt, they might want to let us know.
Right, and anyone in the audience should be aware that we are planning to do all the sames today, so if anybody has a problem, you know, you might want to tell our staff immediately so that when we get to that, we can be informed. And then it is our intention to go from the sames to the similars. Those will be the next thing that we tackle, maybe even on Saturday. We'll see how far we get today. So if you have any of the similars that you don't like, you should also let us know.
And Madam Chair, this may seem like a distinction without much of a difference, but in some cases when you're actually making the motion to move in sames, it might be helpful from a record-keeping standpoint if you move either the House or the Senate, just so that we, both the House and Senate staff, have the same record-keeping.
Okay. Well, I'll move the Senate one for that. We're going to give you all the sames in your column.
Madam Chair, we're all about consensus.
That's right. That's right. Okay, who's
Madam
doing
Chair,
Mr.
Section
Trump?
2 is a provision related to the charter schools and how we calculate general education revenue for them. Either the House or Senate section will need to go into the final bill, but we can't decide that until we agree on formula allowances and things like extended time. Section 3, Madam Chair, is the same, and this just clarifies the definition of learning year programs.
Section 3. I'll move Article 1, Section 3. I'll move the Senate version. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion prevails, and Article 1, Section 3 is adopted.
Madam Chair, Article 1, Section 4 is the same terminology in a different section of statute, as is Article 1, Section 5.
I will move Article 1, Section 4. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Prevails. Article 1, Section 4 is adopted.
Section 5,
Oh, and five as well. And I just had a procedural question from Senator Clark, so I'm going to just plain ask it out loud since we're starting, and I've never chaired a conference committee before. But is it the rule that another member should be moving these? Because I'm fine to have that as well, rather than the chair. Matter? Okay.
On conference committee?
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll move.
In committees, it is somebody other than the chair, but I'm not sure how conference committees. Is there a separate?
I was given some advice that it probably should be somebody else. I don't know that it really matters.
If anyone has an objection, do it. But otherwise, I'll let you guys do the fun ones. I'm going to do the same, though. All right. Article 1, Section 5. I will move that we adopt that one. Any discussion? All in favor? Say aye.
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 Motion prevails. Article 1, Section 5 is approved. Our Article 6, or Section 6.
Madam Chair, thank you. The House and Senate both make changes to the career and technical program. Let me talk about the House changes, and Mr. Nauman can talk about the Senate changes. The House keeps the levy intact as it is, with one correction, technical correction, to the adding the word served. The House also creates a new aid component to accompany the levy. The aid is on top of the levy and consists of an amount equal to 10% of each district's qualifying expenditures. So in addition to the current levy under the House bill, each district would get another state aid equal to 10% of its qualifying career and technical expenditures.
And Madam Chair and members, on the Senate side of the language, line 38.19, you'll notice that the Senate strikes the $80 levy allowance and increases it to $91 per pupil. So it's an all-a levy increase, and we discussed that yesterday with the in the tracking.
And so this is one of the types of sections that we'll have to work out. But when we both have the same topic, it looks like we are both supportive of this sort of opportunities for students, and that's a good thing. Section 7.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Section 7 of the House bill has to do with the limited English proficiency program. There are several changes in the House bill. Two of those show up in Section 7 and 8. What these changes do, currently under the LEP program, a student is only eligible for revenue for up to 5 years. In Section 7, the House eliminates this cap on LEP revenue and makes it an unlimited number of years. In Section 8, then, the House adopts a different formula amount to accompany this new LEP pupil count. The basic formula amount, which is what's listed in Section 8, is increased from $590 to, or rather, from $700 to $815. And then later in this article, you'll see where the concentration for the LEP formula, which is currently $190 per pupil, is eliminated.
And members, that's Section 19. And we would invite questions from senators on this section if you don't understand it, because this, one of our goals in the House was to close the, or not close, we would love to close it, but at least to address the achievement gap or the learning disparities, as Senator or Representative Mariani has taught us is a better way to phrase it. And so do the senators have any questions about that? You've probably gone over it already in your studying, so maybe you don't. But I just want to make sure, because this is an important provision to the House, that you take some time if you do have questions. Okay, very good.
Madam Chair, members, the next section is Section 9. This provision has to do with the equalizing factor for the Madam Chair, the equalizing factor for the levies that are spread on referendum market value. The House creates a new equalizing factor that takes the total statewide tax base and divides it by the number of marginal cost pupil units for the school year. This is a definition. Essentially, the purpose of this definition is so that a statewide average amount of referendum market value can be used each year for equalizing the referendum. As we'll see later when we get to that program, the goal behind this is to stabilize the amount that's of aid that's in the referendum program so that it doesn't lose value over time as tax base increases. Madam Chair, Section 10 is a new provision of general education revenue, the definition of which is required, called the Location Equity Index. This is a provision that that was brought to the committee by Representative Benson. What this does is define a new index that will be used to compute revenue for some school districts. The index is based on two components, the wages within that school district and also the housing values within that school district. And this index number then is assigned to each school district. Additional funding is generated under general education for those with high index numbers.
This is Representative Heidgerken's favorite part of our bill.
Sure. Sure.
Madam Chair, members, the next provision, Section 11, is the definition of pupil units. This is where the House funds full-day kindergarten by increasing the pupil weighting from 0.557 to 0.86 beginning in fiscal year 2009.
Madam Chair.
Senator Clark.
Quick question, because I know how strong of a commitment the House has to anti-kindergarten. As you know, I certainly personally like anti-kindergarten. My question would be with the weight. Obviously, that doesn't get you up to a full day for every child. So how are you looking at districts utilizing those resources?
I guess I am Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is, of course, only the second year of the biennium, and so we would have liked to have done it for the full biennium, but when we looked at the target, even with the target that we have, we just couldn't quite do it that way. But we figure that a lot of the districts will not have the space or be ready to implement right away. So Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom, take a look at in Article 1, Section 11, at the actual wording of that so that members understand that, because we have tried to have enough flexibility in the language that every district can actually use it, and we think that that will be enough given how districts choose to implement it. They already do have some funding, so what page would that be on?
Would you then be considering it, the districts may have it in some schools, or they'd phase it in, or it's a goal that we're moving towards, or we're moving towards in the House bill, or?
Senator Clark, it's on R7.
Actually, R8 has
R8, okay. Let's look at...
Madam Chair, it might be helpful for members to know that what the House is doing is changing the pupil weighting. All kindergarten pupils, regardless of the level of service, would count at 0.86. The bill is voluntary essentially in two ways. That is, first, no child is required to go to kindergarten full-time, and second, no school district is required to offer full-day kindergarten. So instead, each school district would be generating more revenue on its kindergarten pupils, but there's not a requirement that they all offer.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, so they can obtain this whether they deliver any all-day kindergarten or not.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, yes, that's correct.
To having some additional or some commitment to all-day kindergarten for the use of this revenue.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, yes, that's correct.
And so that kind of answers Senator Clark's question as well. We realize that some districts are trying really hard to pass levy referendums or bond referendums for space. Others might not need a whole nother building, but yet they don't have the space. And so then they could use this money in some way to, to do what they can. Some districts are already offering all-day kindergarten for a fee. And then, they may not have everybody that wants to actually access the program. Some families, I've talked to families who said, even if that were offered, even if it were free, we would keep our children home. We have stayed home to give our kids a good start, and we think we're going to keep doing that. They may not want to homeschool their kids after kindergarten. But for that, they have planned to take field trips and come up here to the Capitol and do various things, and they would like to continue doing that. But the district, regardless, will still get this amount of money, and then they can use it in a flexible way. We were trying to be cognizant of the fact that there are space limitations and that everybody wouldn't want to do it, but how are districts going to know who all wants to do it? So they do need to get the money, and then they can plan accordingly. Senator Wieger.
Madam Chair, would a school district be able to continue to charge a fee for a kindergarten student?
Senator Wieger, that is not our intention, and I'm going to have to ask staff if we have any language in there to actually say that, because when we went to this section, I was thinking I would see more than just that little fiscal thing in there. Mr. Strzok.
Madam Chair, the House did not add language that prohibits a fee. So currently, the current law allows a school district through its community education department to run a half-day kindergarten program for a fee. A district cannot do that through its general fund. Mm-hmm. It has to do that through its community education fund. And the House did not limit or require additional fee language there.
So, Senator Wieger, if we think districts might kind of run around us on that, we don't like to micromanage and put every little detail in here that they might figure out some way. But if I thought the district was actually going to take this money and still charge parents a fee when that's not our intention, then we should maybe clarify that. But I guess I would be shocked. But, I'm shocked every day with things that happen. Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, I know some are work on having some scholarship for those who can't afford it. If they were managing it well, for having that fee through community ed, but this, they could set some. Could they not set some income limits and use this for that purpose or not? Does this language allow the school district that flexibility,
so
they could aim it at more of the at risk that might, whose families may not have been able to provide for the fee through the community ed?
Senator Olson, we've just heard that we don't have micromanaging language in here, so it gives maximum opportunity for flexibility, and we may want to make it more clear, or we may want to leave it flexible and see what happens, and if we have to come back and tighten it up later, that would be something, of course, that legislators can always do. I have, like a lot of people, I think, around this table, at least maybe at least four of us have been school board members, and so I think that school board members are just as intelligent as we are and can make good decisions as well. And so I always am looking for flexible local language whenever we can. But if others think differently, I'm open to more clarifying discussions too. So. Okay, back to where were we anyway?
Madam Chair, we're at sections 12 and 13 of the House bill. These two sections, Madam Chair, have to do with the amount of time that a student can qualify in excess of 1.0 as a pupil in average daily membership. As committee members may know, in 2003, that amount was reduced from 1.5 to 1.2, and a few years prior to that, average daily membership was unlimited and a cap was put in place at 1.5. So these two sections are essentially restoring the 2003 cut, allowing schools to offer students additional funding from for summer school and after school activities up to a pupil weighting of 1.5 students in average daily membership.
Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, I'm a little slow on the uptake, so if we could step back to the last discussion we were having.
Senator Rummel, you're not slow on the uptake. We know you're not.
If we have partial funding, not partial, that's not the right word. We're doing 0.86 per pupil units for kindergarten next year or in 08 or 09?
Senator Rummel, in the second year.
In the second
not
year.
The first year. And actually, if we had fully funded this bill so that it would be, right now the 0.6 or whatever we've got for kindergarten, if it had been the 1.2, the bill would have cost like $320 million. So you can see, we did have to compromise with ourselves, but we think by starting it in the second year and then this amount of money that every family that wants their kindergartners to have all day, every day kindergarten, this will be enough for them to all have that opportunity, given the logistics, et cetera.
So the assumption is that not every family will want it, and the 0.86 will cover it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair,
how did
0.86, how was that derived? Was that purely a monetary, just how much money we had to work with, or was there a particular reason that could not?
Senator Clark, you want the real story.
I love the real story.
Okay. Our leadership is very, very, as you know, interested in all-day kindergarten. And so when we were actually looking at this, they said, they really felt they gave us enough money in our target to do all-day kindergarten in the second year, at least up to 0.8, and we could do what we wanted after that. And we really prioritized this just as much as our leadership, and even more because we added it up to 0.86. And, other than that, we had very little direction, as things that leadership would like to see in our bill, and we just kept hoping we could get more in there, and it got up to 0.86.
So, Madam Chair, you were able to scrounge within your target to get it up a little higher.
Scrounge is a good word. Yeah. We scrounged very hard. Yep, thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, members.
Madam Chair, just one more.
Yes, Representative Salzman.
So if I understand the House position right, to call it all-day K may not be totally honest, because you're really not funding a student to be there all day. It's still like the 0.86. I'm just because if a school district wanted to do all-day K for all students and say all students want to be there, the House position might be that you would not want to allow them to charge for that other point, whatever, 0.2 to fully fund.
Senator Salzman, we have studied this a lot over in the House, and we believe every child in Minnesota whose family wishes them to go to all day, every day kindergarten will be able to on this amount. We've talked to all the people, or not all the people, but people who would be implementing this. We've looked at the numbers, and we have been convinced with our staff that we can with confidence say every child who wishes to do this will be able to do this on this amount of money.
So just a follow-up, Madam Chair. So school districts have told you that if they receive funding at 0.86, every school district in this state, I guess barring the whole facility debate, could fund. I know there's an issue of every child could, but has every school district signed off to say that they could provide all-day K at a 0.86 weighting?
Senator Salzman, I learned in, I think, high school, never say always, ever, no, never, every single
never?
One.
Yeah.
I would never, ever, ever say that.
There you go.
So we don't know what the school districts have said about this?
Or? Senator Salzman, I think that school districts are listening, and you could ask them after this meeting, because they're probably hearing your very good question. Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe this is an opportunity. I see it as an opportunity to wean them from us having to specifically tell them exactly what they have to do, see if they've got enough innovative ability to recognize an opportunity and see how they creatively use it. I mean, it could be an interesting approach.
Thank you very much, Senator Olson. That is exactly what we think will happen with this. We're hoping that, and we're glad to hear your interest in this, and Senator Salzman, I'm glad to hear your practical questions, and if we think this, if you find out that this will not work, we're happy to add more money to this.
And Madam Chair, perhaps Senator Olson will go talk to the governor about finding us some more money, so we might be able to do
that. There's a thought. Senator Olson, I know you have an appointment on Monday, and we'll, with this governmental operations person anyway, and I know you'll be putting in a good word, so thank you very much. All right, the next section.
Madam Chair, members, Strong. Article 1, Section 14 is the definition of the elements that are components of general education revenue. The House amends this definition to include location equity revenue as an additional category of general education revenue.
And Madam Chair and members, in Section 6 of the Senate bill on the right side, the Senate changes the definition of general education revenue to exclude the alternative teacher compensation beginning in fiscal year 2009. Members will recall that program was rolled out of general education and is set up as a separate grant program in the Senate bill in fiscal year 2009.
Madam Chair, members, the next provision has to do with the basic formula allowance. Under the House bill, the formula allowance is increased by 3% per year. These raise the amount from $4,974 to $5,125 per pupil in fiscal year 2008 and to $5,280 per pupil for fiscal years 2009 and later.
And, Madam Chair, Section 7 in the Senate bill makes a technical adjustment to eliminate old formula allowances from the statute.
Madam Chair, members, the next section is Section 16, which has to do with extended time revenue. There are two changes contained here. The first of those is increasing the maximum pupil weight for extended time pupils from 1.2 to 1.5. This matches the pupil changes that were in the earlier sections. And then secondly, this formula is currently not linked to the general education formula. So as the basic formula allowance goes up, this amount stays at a fixed amount. The House increases this by the same percentage points that it increases the basic formula allowance. So the extended time revenue formula goes from $4,601 to $4,740 for fiscal year 2008 and then up to $4,880 for fiscal years 2009 and later. Madam Chair, members, the next section is Section 17 of the House Bill. This is the gifted and talented revenue. The amount of gifted and talented revenue is increased by $4 per pupil unit from $9 to $13 beginning for fiscal year 2008 and later. Madam Chair, members, the next section is Section 18. This is the location equity revenue. As I mentioned earlier, this is a new component of general education revenue that's based on wage levels and housing levels. Each district has the equity index that was determined in the definitional section multiplied by the basic formula allowance. The total amount of revenue that's generated by this provision is capped at $500,000 per year. Madam Chair, members, the
Madam
next
Chair?
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question. If there was not a cap at 13.18, what do you project the amount of revenue would be?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, the Department of Finance issued a fiscal note on this a couple of weeks ago. It's not clear if they were using the same factors on the index or not. There's some issue about that, but I think the fiscal note they issued was about $500 million or thereabouts.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, members, the next section is the operating capital levy. As members may know, capital levy is set with an equalizing factor in statute. When that levy was first created, the amount was set at $22,222. That amount was reduced to $10,700. This bill increases that cap up to $33,000, beginning with taxes payable in 2008. This has a price tag of about $78 million per year.
And Madam Chair and members, beginning at Section 8 is the first section of the Senate bill that begins to affect and do the consolidated levy. Members will recall in the discussion from, I believe it was yesterday, there were three levies, operating capital, transition, and equity, that have their individual levies canceled under the Senate bill beginning in fiscal year 2009, and then the monetary value of those levies is rolled together and then reduced by $100 million. So as a result of those changes, individual calculations on aid and levy for those three levies is no longer necessary. So the Senate bill in Section 8 and in Section 9 limits the aid and levy calculations for one more fiscal year. So that's 2008, and then beginning in 2009, we would have the new levy.
And at this point, I'm going to call on Senator Clark so that she can, because we do have this consolidated levy that that we would like to understand better that you're putting forward. And so Senator Clark has proposed actually having a separate meeting on it. It's an important provision to the Senate. So that we can all understand it a little better. And so I'm going to call on her now to explain how we're going to do that and when.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so members are aware, we will be meeting on Saturday. What we have discussed is meeting at 9:30. Our hope would be to adopt half staff work between now and then, because we know the House will be in session all day tomorrow, but work on similar provisions that we can go through and hopefully adopt at that point. But I thought we'd take a couple of topics that might need a little bit more of a presentation to understand. This is something that I think several of us on our committee, it took us a while to grasp really what had happened previously, what the impact of this could be, and how it helps us in the long run with funding stability. But as good as Mr. Nauman is when he's describing sections like that, even I have my eyes glazing over. So we thought that particular topic would be something that could have kind of a plain language conversation about. And as we go through the rest of today, there may be other things on either side that you might want to spend a little bit more time just going through on Saturday. So that was kind of our thought. So Saturday we'll be able to do that.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Clark, would it be your intent to take some testimony as well? Or just
I think we were just planning on having a conversation, but we can think about it.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Clark, what does that mean? Conversation among members?
Yes.
Or not any response from anybody else on inside or
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, at this point, our plan was to have a presentation by Mr. Nauman and for us to be able to talk about it. But between now and then, we were planning on having a further conversation what else we might want to do on that day.
And then, I don't know if you said it or not, but I'll say it just so the people that aren't, that we told the members, but that for the audience, that we're hoping to be done so people can still go home for lunch on Saturday.
And Madam Chair, I suppose we should also alert people if we get other information about what else we might be able to do that might change our plans.
Everything changes. We didn't even think we were meeting on Saturday.
That's right. That's good news. We'll be able to make further progress.
Progress is always good. All right. So in other words, as Mr. Nauman is going through the consolidated levy, if members have, you know, quick questions, you can certainly feel free on the House side to ask them, but just know that we will spend more in-depth time on Saturday. Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, I should mention that both sections 8 and 9 are ultimately repealed in the Senate bill. We make this limitation for fiscal year 2008 on both the aid and levy pieces, and then when we get to the repealers, those sections are repealed effective in fiscal 09. Both the House and Senate bills in Section 21 of the House and Section 10 of the Senate make adjustments to the transportation sparsity revenue calculations. The Department of Education has done a new regression analysis dealing with the cost of transportation, and the governor recommended some changes to several of the factors, and both the House and the Senate adopted those changes.
All right, I'll move Article 1, Section 21. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I think this is an issue that deals with money, and you may want to hold on that because it's built into the inside the general education calculations.
Okay. You're right. Anything that deals with money, we're going to hold on until we have a target. We're not spending a dime because even if it's the same, it may not make the cut if it's money. All right, let's proceed then.
Madam Chair, members, Article 1, Section 22 has to do with equity revenue. The House makes one change to the equity revenue formula. Currently, those districts that's referendum is at or above the 95th percentile receive an additional $23 per pupil unit. The House proposes to increase this to $46 per pupil so that these districts are treated the same as all the others for that single component of equity revenue.
And Madam Chair and members, the Senate functionally takes that same position and allows the $46 to all school districts. However, it also accepts the governor's recommendation to streamline several of the equity calculations. This is a formula that began with one purpose and has expanded to a variety of others, and the Senate found some merit in the governor's recommendation to streamline this. So there's several sections of law in the repealer that get repealed, but the Senate language, primarily sections 11, 12, 13, deal with the governor's recommendation to streamline those equity calculations. It's now tied more closely to the formula allowance and eliminates some of the need to make those individual percentile calculations that when one district passes a referendum, it would throw all the other districts' relationships off. And so the Senate found some merit in that initiative. Sections 14 and 15 of the Senate bill, again, are part of the consolidation. Equity revenue is an aid levy split calculation. So we are setting the levies in the Senate bill for fiscal years 2007 and 8, as well as the aid calculations. And then, as I mentioned, those two sections will again be repealed at the end of the article. Section 16 of the Senate bill relates to the governor's recommendation on the streamlining of equity. When those changes are made, like many things in education, there are winners and losers on a school district basis. And this change also encompasses, on the subsequent page, Section 17, the transition revenue program is a program that has been used in the past to hold districts harmless, and we have created some calculations to hold those districts that have negative revenue impacts as a result of the equity changes, and sections 16 and 17 make those changes. Section 18 and 19 of the Senate bill are the final aid and levy existing calculations, in this case for the transition aid and levy calculations. These are the final two pieces that are limited for fiscal year 2007 and 8, and then are again are repealed at the end of the article.
Madam Chair, members, the next section is moved from Article 2, Section 46 in the side-by-side to match up with the Senate provision. There are a number of provisions related to the Alternative Compensation Program, which sometimes goes by the name of the QCOMP program. These are sometimes in Article 1, sometimes in Article 2. This particular change on the House side, which is in House Article 2, Section 46, has to do with the ability of the intermediate school districts to qualify for QCOMP. This provision allows an alternative calculation for them so that they can base their calculation on the number of teachers at each site instead of the pupil count. This is because the intermediate school districts tend to have a lot of teachers but very few students who are actually enrolled at the intermediate and count as adjusted average daily membership. Instead, they tend to be there on a tuition agreement or otherwise through an agreement with the intermediate so that they don't show up in the pupil count of the intermediate.
Mr. Strom, I just noticed you're working off the summary, aren't you?
Yes, yes.
Okay. That's Section 20 of the Senate, Article 1, Section 20.
Even paper can be confusing.
Madam Chair, I apologize for this. On some of these provisions that appear in each article, they get moved back and forth, and we've confused ourselves royally on this one. But I believe if
you're sorry about we know if you're confused, you'll find it out.
Just a moment, Madam Chair. I'm sorry.
R51.
Thank you, Mr. Sturm. It'll help me to do it that way. Yes, Madam Chair and members, what we're seeing here in the Senate bill is some changes. I think we discussed yesterday with the spreadsheet discussion that the Senate made two policy initiatives associated with the QCOMP program. The first was to eliminate the growth in the program. There was about $62 million over the 08-09 biennium for projected growth, and that money was recaptured. Then the program was rolled out of the general education program and into a separate grant program. What you're seeing happening here in Section 20 of the Senate bill is first primarily some of the cleanup language that was contained in the House, and then a fiscal year limitation in the general education program for two more years. Then you'll notice I'm actually looking at the language, but the Senate bill changes the overall aid amount that is in the general education program from the existing $75.6 million for fiscal year 07 down to a $44.1 million level, and that's the recapture of the projected aid growth. Then, Madam Chair and members, sections 21 and 22 functionally look very similar to the changes that have been made to accomplish the consolidated levy. And some members on the Senate thought that the QCOMP program was in fact going to be rolled into the consolidated levy. But instead, this program, as I mentioned, has been rolled out beginning in fiscal year 2009. So we limit the inside general education, the alternative compensation levy, to just two more years, and the aid pieces as well. No, there's a lot of pieces there, Madam Chair. So, Madam Chair and members, the next piece in the Senate bill is Section 23, and this is the consolidated levy tax rate. And we have talked about the elimination of the aid and levy calculations for operating capital, transition, and equity, and the monetary value of those levies being combined into a single levy, and then in that levy titled the consolidated levy. This levy is imposed on a slightly different basis. The way this works is under the Senate language is the Department of Education is instructed to establish we take a total dollar amount, and that dollar amount is about $119 million statewide, and then the department is instructed to calculate a rate that is even across all school districts. Members will note, if they crawl through the language, that under the Senate bill, that 119 is for the first year. In the second year, it grows to 134 and then 148. Under the calculations in the February forecast, the projections for the levies for equity, operating capital, and transition do include a fair amount of growth over the time period of the projection. The Senate would have loved to have kept that rate at $119 million, but was unable to do so. So instead, it just reduced the levies in an amount equal to $100 million each year. So if you look at the numbers in the bill and think about instead of 234 in fiscal year 2010, we're at 134. And instead of 148 million, instead of 248 million, we're at 148. So those are the $100 million reduction that we saw in the tracking yesterday. Section 24 of the bill actually imposes the levy. Districts under the language may under levy, and if they do, there is a proportionate levy reduction, aid reduction. And this is fairly standard. It's how many other levies within the general education program are treated today. In the off chance in Section 25 of the bill that there are districts whose levy rate, as calculated by the Department of Education, would exceed their general education revenue, this section just holds those districts to the amount that they would have generated on the revenue side and establishes that limitation. Madam Chair and Senator Olson, no, I think what you're thinking about is a provision that's coming a little bit later. Okay. Madam Chair and members, Section 24 in the House bill, Section 26 in the Senate bill establishes the actual general education aid. And the Senate had to, maybe I'll let Mr. Strom speak to the changes. It looks primarily to be some cleanup there, unless I'm missing my guess here. Under the language of the Senate bill, because there were changes to the elimination of operating capital aid and transition aid and equity aid as separate calculations, and we now have an environment in the Senate bill with a consolidated levy, we had to make some adjustments to move those into a – we had to clean up the language to make that happen.
Madam Chair, members, the next section, Article 1, Section 25, has to do with the allocation of compensatory revenue. This provision essentially allows a school district to spend up to 5% of its compensatory revenue for students in school readiness or other pre-kindergarten programs. Madam Chair, members, the next section is Section 26. 26 has to do with the operating referendum program. The House changes the equalizing factors. Under current law, that program has two tiers. The first tier, which is up to the first $700 per pupil unit, is equalized at $476,000 per pupil unit, and the second tier is equalized at $270,000 per pupil unit. Under the House bill, additional money is put into the referendum equalization aid program by increasing the first tier from $476,000 to 120% of the state average referendum market value, which is at this point in time estimated at $567,000 per pupil.
Senator Salzman.
On that point, Madam Chair, how many additional districts will either come back onto the equalization formula or receive, or how many more districts will this impact?
Mr. Crow, I guess, is going to answer that.
Madam Chair, Senator Salzman, we've got that number somewhere. We'll see if we can dig that up off the network here.
We'll get back to that one as soon as the computer speeds itself up.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members, the next section 27 in the House bill is on the referendum revenue ballot question. Currently, there's language on the ballot question that says when a district is renewing an existing referendum that says you may be voting for a property tax increase. The House had quite a discussion about what this language should be, and the current language now reads you are not changing your operating referendum from its level in the previous year.
And members, this language I hope we can convince the Senate to adopt, because we on the Education Committee thought it was just a clarifying, very simple, it made sense to us, we didn't hardly discuss it. Then we took our education finance bill, our education omnibus bill, to the Tax Committee, and Representative Mariani and I were there for what I think it was 2 hours or something.
2 hour debate
on this provision. And then they put their stamp on it. So I can't imagine that there could be anything the matter with this provision. But, you know, if it's got to be not passed and done again, we want you senators to take it to your tax committee. Senator Olson.
How many years have we tried to change that language to make it a little clearer or fairer? We never seem to have achieved it, but you've got some pretty good language here.
It was bipartisanly adopted by the time the 2 hours were up. Senator Clark.
Well, Madam Chair, I was thinking, given the 2 hours that you spent in the tax meeting, we don't need to do that here, but perhaps on one of our other discussions, we have a longer discussion, many of what you saw, and it would be unusual for a conference committee to go back through the tax committee, so I don't think we'll be going that route, but I think we'll want to hear more about what you were thinking, because I think many of us, this would be an interesting conversation.
It will. It was.
Glad you did the work.
Yeah.
Mr. Strzok. Madam Chair, in answer to Senator Saltzman's question, 245 districts currently receive referendum equalization aid. An additional 31 would receive aid under the House provision, and those additional 245 would also receive an increase in the amount of their equalization aid.
Senator Saltzman.
So just another follow-up question, Madam Chair. I know that in your bill you have the I can't think of the name of it right now. The formula for the cost of living index. That location. Which equity. Right location the location equity formula.
We call it the LEI.
The LEI. I'll get used to that name. So when we're talking about referendum equalization levies, have you considered, because you're using the statewide average, how that impacts metro versus non-metro, and who and how many districts are picked up out of those 31? Because I'm just guessing that the metro-wide average for equalization is going to be a lot higher.
Madam Chair, Senator Saltzman, your guess is accurate. The districts in the metropolitan area have quite a bit more tax base per pupil unit than the districts in the rest of the state. Let me see if I can find a quick... yeah, we could give you a total change in aid, metro, non-metro here.
So not today necessarily, but at some point, if we move forward on this, that would be very helpful.
It sounds like they already have it.
Madam Chair and members, the House proposal splits actually just on a percentage basis about 60% of the revenue is metro school districts, and the balance is non-metro.
So just to follow up, just one more, excuse me, Madam Chair. Well, it's 60-40 in terms of the number of districts. How would that split? How would the 31 districts split that are picked up?
Remember, there's 245 districts that get aid now. They will all get more aid. The 31 is just the ones that don't get any now, and they will get additional aid, and we'll have to do some more analysis to figure out which one of those are metro versus rural.
You going to do that now, or should we press on?
Press on, and we'll do it now.
We'll press on, okay. And both, and you'll do it now, okay. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Article 1, Section 28 has to do with the county apportionment deduction. Currently, some types of revenue are treated separate from the property tax base. For example, certain generation equipment for utilities, including the wind energy generation equipment, is exempt from paying a property tax. Under current law, this property instead pays a payment to the county that's split among the taxing jurisdictions, of which 6% goes to school districts. That amount goes to school districts as additional revenue under current law. The House and Senate both adopted a provision that the governor recommended that would treat this 6% amount as an offset to general education aid. So instead of this being additional revenue to those school districts, it will now be a reduction to their general education aid. Madam Chair, Section 29 has to do with the process for reducing general education aid in cases where there's a maintenance of effort issue. A school district may run into a federal maintenance of effort issue on its special education if the if its spending is not at the level it was in the previous year. For school districts that are members of special education cooperatives, the statute was not clear how we'd make that adjustment, and this section essentially creates a process to make that adjustment to school districts that are members of special education cooperatives.
Adopted?
Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, that can't be adopted even though it's the same? Is it have a... It's describing a maintenance of effort obligation rather than just a revenue, isn't it? Or how?
Section 31. Let's see. Did that have any fiscal implications, Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, we'd hope not, as we're not aware of any school district running into a maintenance of effort problem. There's a one or two word difference, I believe, and I don't know if Senate staff could identify that for you.
Madam Chair and members, we think that the House bill might be a little superior in that I'm looking at line 20.7. I think it's clearer to say the aid reduction amount to the member school districts. I think that's the difference.
All right, then I'll move Article 1, Section 31, the House language. Any discussion? Mm-hmm. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and that section is adopted. 32.
Madam Chair, did you just say 31, or did you mean 29?
She meant 29, I think.
Oh, did I say? Thank you, Senator Wieger. The staff has asked me, begged me, please repeat everything so that they get it down right. If I don't say the right thing, it doesn't do them much good, though, does it? So we'll just pretend that I said 29 instead of 31. It's a good thing about these conference committees is we don't keep minutes, so we don't have to go back and correct dumb things that chairs do. We can just say it. It is. So we just adopted Article 1, Section 29. We haven't got to 31 yet. Thank you, Senator Wieger. Keep awake.
Madam Chair, members, the next section has to do with the Safe Schools Levy, which was formerly called the Crime Levy. Both bills amend this authority. Let me explain the House changes. The House adds $3 per pupil unit for all school districts. The current amount is $27 per pupil. So the House increases that by $3 to $30 per pupil. And second, the House adds an additional $5 per pupil to school districts that are members of the intermediate school districts. Third, the House adds some additional language and allows the revenue to be spent on licensed support personnel who engage in activities that are designed to provide early responses to certain student problems. And finally, the House creates a maintenance of effort requirement that a school district can't supplant their current spending for licensed school support personnel.
And Madam Chair and members, under the language of the Senate bill, it's very similar. The changes in the Senate bill are very similar to the House paragraph B, the difference being that the House increases the levy for the intermediates by $5 per pupil, and the Senate would go up to $10. Madam Chair and members, Section 31 of the House bill, Section 30 of the Senate bill are the same. They correct the technical cross-reference and in some of the aid reduction levy recognition statutes. I believe these sections are the same.
And this was a non-monetary one, so I'll move Article 1, Section 31. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion prevails. Article 1, Section 31 is adopted. Mr. Crow has the answer for Senator Salzman, so we have to remember to get back to that answer when she gets back.
Madam Chair, Article 1, Section 32 has to do with the payments under open enrollment. This provision adds an additional revenue payment for school districts for students who open enroll from one district to another by adding to the referendum equalization aid. Under current law, when a school district receives a student under open enrollment, that student brings with them an amount of referendum equalization aid equal to the serving district's amount of equalization aid. So those districts that are off the formula do not receive any payment on the referendum. This bill adds for those districts in proportion to the percent of open enrollment students a new funding source that's state aid for referendum equalization aid.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, the next section of the House bill is Section 33, and this has to do with the general education aid subtraction applicable to charter schools. This, even though this provision is the same, this accompanies the transportation sparsity change and it would potentially have a financial impact.
All right, and then before you go on to the next one, Senator Salzman is back, so Mr. Crow, he has your answer.
Very good, thank you.
Madam Chair and members, there are, as I mentioned before, there are 245 districts that currently receive referendum equalization aid. Of those 245 districts, 13 districts are metro districts, and we have about 49 metro districts, depending on your definition. And of the 31 districts who go from no aid to some aid under the House bill, 14 of those districts are metro districts.
Senator Salzman, any follow-up?
Well, perhaps just one more question. Was there any reason to go with 120%? I know that just like with the kindergarten, basically was that the amount of money that you had in order to... as a target for the aid?
Madam Chair,
Mr.
In terms of process, the House K-12 Committee and the House Property Tax Committee had a joint meeting and a joint process in terms of determining how the school property tax numbers would be arrived at. An overall target was arrived at a net of $125 million, and then that amount was allocated between the among the debt service program, the referendum equalization, and the operating capital program. Those amounts then, Madam Chair, you may want to speak to how that was arrived at, but essentially there was some looking at how the metro and non-metro distribution of those levies fell.
And Senator Salzman, this will be, our discussion that we will have when you have, I don't know that we'll do it on Saturday because that's your gavel, but at some point we will have discussion also of our property tax proposal, and it might be useful to do them Saturday. Our staff has spreadsheets for us of comparing your consolidated levy to our, it looks like I hear the chair nodding for Saturday, so we'll look at both of them on Saturday. To our property tax relief, and when we got our $125 million target for property tax relief, we handed it over to Representative Paul Marquardt and his committee. It was a very innovative model that was thought up in the House. I'm not going to claim credit for it myself, but it was thought up by creative people, and Representative Marquardt had a committee made up of K-12 finance members and tax committee members, and then some people were on both committees. So it was very, very helpful to have the members who understand both the tax committee and the K-12 committee work on it together. And then, though, so the rest of us dumb buddies weren't left behind. We actually had a hearing that we all went to, both the whole tax committee and the K-12 finance committee, and we got to hear the joint bills that had anything to do to suggest anything that they should consider for this area, and then the property tax division came forward with an amendment in order to recommend to us what was done. And we were sitting there, me as a metro member, looking at Representative Marquardt being a greater Minnesota member, thinking, well, I bet that won't be terribly fair. But they ended up coming up with a fair proposal. Representative Hyde Gerken thought it was a fair proposal. And we thought if he and I could agree on a property tax relief thing, it must be fair. And so we did 73% of it is operating capital. That is, as you know, the only type of property tax relief that the governor recommended. And we believed, and the governor believed, that that was the fairest one to highlight because it benefits all districts all around the state. Instead of just, this is that and this is that and there's winners and losers, we were counting on Representative Marquardt and his committee to give us something that was fair to everybody, and they did. And we didn't have them. It was a balanced and fair bill that we put into our balanced and fair bill, and we were very proud of the section that we have. And our members are just as committed to our property tax relief as you may be to your consolidated levy. So that's going to be one of the contentious points. I hope it won't be contentious because we all have the same goal, but one of the highly discussed points would be a better way to put it, I think, on this committee, and a really important part because we all are charged to be legislators for our own district, but we have to always remind ourselves that we're for legislators for the whole state, and we don't want winners and losers when it comes to things that impact our students. That would be unconstitutional. So we tried very hard to be fair, and I know you did as well, and that's we'll discuss it on Saturday.
Madam Chair, let's plan on going through both proposals.
Great.
We have the same goal in mind. We made sure there were no losers, so we'll see that on Saturday.
All right.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
A clarification from Mr. Crow's numbers. There were 200. Are there 245 districts that are currently getting it, the referendum equalization, and 13 of those are metro? And then was the 14 an additional 14 metro that will, and what is the total number that will get it referendum equalization under your proposal?
Madam Chair, an additional 31 districts, of which 14 of metro, will get equalization aid. So a total of 276 districts will get equalization aid.
276.
27 of which will be metro districts.
Total. And okay.
Senator Olson.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
Madam Chair, just the problem actually came up a couple years ago, and Brooklyn Center, we found out, had a distinct correlation. They had a problem similar to Upsala, and we had both of them down here and testify, and we kind of used those two as a model, one from the metro area and one from the greater Minnesota, and we worked with both those school districts and came up with something quite similar to what we have. So.
All right. Mr. Strong.
Madam Chair, members, the next provision that we get to is sections 34 and 35, which have to do with the abatements and excess tax increment. Currently, we make some aid calculations based on the equalized levies. Equalized levies are those that have a state aid amount attached to them. For a number of years, these amounts have not changed as we've changed our levy structure. Both the House and Senate bill update these calculations to make them current for the aids and levies that are equalized, and the Senate makes an additional change for their bill. Madam Chair, members, there are three election provisions in the House bill. Section 36 of Article 1 was added by a floor amendment, and so it was added in Article 1. The other two election provisions are in Article 2 of, or Article 5, rather, of the bill. The provision that was added in Article 1 has to do with the circumstance in which voters in a district require a school district election by petition. The current statute said that a petition could be filed if either a petition was filed with 50 signatures or 5% of the number of voters. It did not say greater or lesser. It just said one or the other. The amendment that was added on the House floor makes it clear that on those petitions that they have to be the greater of 50 signatures or 5% of the number of voters voting in the most recent school district election. Madam Chair, members, the next provision in both bills is the same, and this has to do with the Commissioner of Education's reporting of the settlement monies from the county apportionment. This ties into the wind energy provisions that we discussed earlier.
So let's see, is this a financial implication one or not?
Madam Chair, yes, a very small financial implication to including the wind energy provisions.
Okay, we won't do that one.
Madam Chair, members, Section 38 is only in the House bill. This has to do with the alternative process for distributing compensatory revenue. As members know, compensatory revenue must be distributed to the sites at which the revenue is earned. In 2005, a pilot project was created for five school districts to redistribute the compensatory revenue based on student performance instead of on the free and reduced lunch characteristics of each student. The House adds the sixth school district, Brooklyn Center, to the pilot program.
Madam Chair and members, in Section 39 of the House bill, Section 35 of the Senate bill, make a technical adjustment to an incorrect fiscal year in the closing moments of the 2006 legislature. Money was appropriated on a, for one-time energy assistance aid. It was incorrectly drafted as 2007 instead of 2006, which is what the conference committee agreed to. Both bills make those changes. The Senate, the House bill, rather, has probably slightly improved effective date language.
So I could do that one then? Okay, I will move Article 1, Section 39, right, Senator Weaker?
Correct.
Okay. And the House language then. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Motion prevails. Section 40.
Madam Chair, Section 40 of the House bill has to do with the school finance task force. The House appoints a task force with members appointed by the legislature and outlines the goals for the task force to consider and requires the task force to report back on its school finance recommendations by January 15th, 2008.
And I would just say about this one, the members of PS Minnesota suggested to us the House language, and because they actually, well, I don't know, maybe they suggested over in the Senate the other language, but they were looking at the timing, you know, could come out with different conclusions, but they were originally looking at finishing up, as you know, and then they couldn't agree, and we've now had a consultant, then we had the advocacy groups with another consultant, and you know, it comes down to, can there be agreement when you need 100% agreement from all the groups, or does it have to be a legislative process where you have legislators that do the sort of thing we're doing around this table with some give and take and compromises, but you know, everybody doesn't like every part of it, and that's why we ended up with the legislators on it, but that's something we can discuss as we go forward.
Madam Chair, we obviously we looked at that and we came up with a slightly different approach that we also thought would work well, and so we can come to a good agreement. I think we all want to make sure we're moving forward.
Just so we do get it done this time. I said a bill with blanks in it is not a bill yet.
Yes, Madam Chair, it makes it very hard to figure out how to change the formula if there's a lot of blanks.
That's right.
Madam Chair, members, the next section, Section 41 in the House bill, has to do with another study. This relates to the issue of charter school pupil transportation. There was a bill in the House that would have required certain excess costs for charter school pupil transportation to be charged back to the charter school. This was an amendment that was offered after that bill was heard, and this requires the commissioner to study the financing of transportation services for charter school pupils.
Madam Chair and members, the next section in the Senate bill is Section 36. This relates to the Senate's alternative compensation limitation and the growth. School district it tells the Department of Education that they must limit the participation in the alternative teacher pay program to those sites that are currently in the program and any sites that have an approved plan by March 10th, 2007, and this limitation applies until fiscal year 2012.
And as members know, since there is no House position, then we left it at current law. And this is a spot where I'm sure we are going to have discussions with the governor. We know this is a very important section for him, and so I would say if the governor's listening, you know, this is a place where we do need to come up with some money if we're going to actually be able to do the House position on this one. So hopefully we'll get a good target. Senator Peterson, or Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it appropriate at this time to ask the thinking in eliminating the program to those schools that are just currently in from the other side, from the Senate side?
Well, that's a question to Senator Parker and Senator Clark.
I was going to say, Madam Chair, we'll have Mr. Nauman talk. We didn't eliminate any current programs whatsoever under, but maybe Mr. Nauman wants to talk a little bit more.
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, I think the thinking on the Senate side was that the program currently has about only 34 school districts in it, and then a small collection of charter schools that are existing participants. I know that the chair of the H-12 Finance Committee, Senator Stump, felt very strongly that this is not a general education program if only a few school districts are actually participating. So the Senate took two paths on this, on the alternative compensation program. The first was to roll it out of general education. So it is no longer part of the general education program. That's not exactly what this language per se does, and that's the second piece. The second piece is that over the biennium, there's about $62 million of aid and about $14 million of levy that have been tied up and used and slated to be used for this program. However, there aren't the program has not received the demand that I think was originally intended. So the Senate felt, with a relatively small target, that it could reallocate those dollars to other portions of the bill. And so functionally, that's what the Senate did. Madam Chair, I should hasten to add that the Senate would be pleased to demonstrate that there is no penalty to any existing charter schools or districts.
Senator Clark. I think the other thing, too, Madam Chair, and Representative Peterson, is that Deputy Commissioner Chaz Anderson also talked to us about that it roughly takes between 5 and 7 years in a pilot to really demonstrate its effectiveness or results. And they were talking about 6 years, and it seemed like it made sense to kind of take a step back and see what's working in which places there's different approaches being done in those districts. And so it seemed like if you put all those together, it was a prudent thing to do.
And our thinking in the House was, and I've heard from some districts that are concerned about this provision in the Senate, and that is because they've been working on it, they've gotten approval from their districts working on a plan, but they haven't made it all the way through the pipeline yet. And so this would actually thwart those districts if, it's leaving it with the ones currently doing it, but there are a considerable amount of districts that are working on doing it. I know in the Roseville area schools, that I represent, one of the three districts I represent, all my districts are in this. So I actually participated in a team in one of the schools that met always in Senator Weaker's district at Edgerton School. And that school that's in your district came up with a plan, and I went when I could. I was kind of an ex officio member, and they had some naysayers on it. I went in as a skeptic, and we all came out believers in it, and they're now doing it, but they've now spread the word and convinced other schools in Roseville that are now working on doing it, and so they would be very, very disappointed if they somehow couldn't do it, which this provision would do. So I'm hoping we can talk about it, but I do think to talk about it successfully, we have to convince the governor to help us come up with a larger target and, to come up with revenue in general, because I know that, obviously your bill that you have, I'll make your point for you this time, that has a very few things in it and also did this, is looking at if we don't have new revenue. So I'm, hoping that, when we do get more revenue in this committee, that we'll take a good look at this, because the House position, I think, is a fair one. It's not just schools in it and then nobody else. It's also affecting strongly the many schools in the pipeline, and we were told in our committee, actually, that current law just barely squeaks in all the schools in the pipeline, and there's just a few others that could start up later that that could be funded, but most of the money in current law would be used up with schools in the pipeline.
And Madam Chair, Senator thank Clark. You for making my
yes.
point, or our point. I think it would be good to have the conversation. We may or may not have the exact right number, but there's been fair amount of money sitting there, and I think we also do need to demonstrate effectiveness, especially when we do have a time of scarce resources, and we should be looking at how to best be prioritizing those dollars. So it'll be good to continue the conversation, but I do think it's important to be pointing out, I know the governor was concerned about that there may be a final product that would eliminate this, and we did not do that in the Senate. We thought it was very important to be looking at, evaluating, and measuring results, and then looking at from a priority standpoint how it fits into everything else.
I think we're certainly halfway there, having the Senate having not eliminated the program. That's definitely true.
So, Madam Chair, I think the next provision is on the Senate side, Section 37, and is one that Senator Olson asked me about earlier. It's the consolidated levy adjustment. When the Senate made the change to corral all the three levies that we discussed earlier and put them into a single levy titled the consolidated levy, nearly every district in the state saw savings after $100 million was put in place to reduce and buy down the total levy amount. And we'll talk about this in more detail on Saturday. But there were a collection of maybe 10 or so districts that did not see savings as a result of the peculiarities of where their levies fell and their particular mix of property. And what the levy did on what the Senate did on a one-time basis was to buy those levies down for taxes payable in 2008. That's fiscal year 2009. The total cost of that provision is about $487,000, so it was not very much.
Mr. Nauman, how long were those they held harmless?
This is a one-time provision. Mr. Crow discussed this earlier when going through the list of one-time aid provisions.
Mr. Nauman, were any of those 10 districts any of mine?
Madam Chair, I frankly didn't think about you when we did it, so I apologize.
Could you check on that? Let me know.
We have a data run on this. I'll be pleased to do that.
When is Senator Olson's? I want to know if any of them are mine.
I don't think so, but I'll be happy to check.
Please let me know. Thank you.
Of course. Madam Chair and members, Section 38 is a provision that makes effectively a transfer of $78 million to buy down levies. This in fiscal year 2009 and $83.3 million in fiscal year 2010 and later. This on the Senate side, the tax bill pays for property tax reductions. Not the whole $100 million that I've mentioned on a number of occasions, but a portion of it, 78 in 2009. So this, what the Senate tax bill does is set that money aside in an account in the general fund called the Education Improvement Account, and then the K-12 bill cancels that money into the education formulas. Section 39 and 40 are declining pupil unit aid for the Browns Valley School District. And Madam Chair and members, Section 41 is an additional declining pupil unit aid for fiscal year 2008 and 9 for the Red Lake School District. And in the Tax Committee, strange things happen, Madam Chair. Section 43, we added a provision for retired employee health benefits for two school districts, Greenway and Carleton. And then, Madam Chair, I think we are left with appropriations. Sorry, did I miss something?
No, I'm just laughing at that last section from the Tax Committee.
Madam Chair, sometimes you're just giving gifts.
Yes, or brickbats, as the case might be. All right, so we did the fiscal tracking sheets already, and now let's see, was it Article repeal?
Madam Chair, there's two sections left at the end of Article 1, sections 43 on the House and 44 and 45 and 46 on the Senate. Section 43 and 45 of the Senate are the same.
43 and?
And Senate 45, so we can do that.
Okay, so we could do that one even though it's similar. Which one should
one's
we do?
One's got a hyphen.
Okay.
Madam Chair, apparently one has a hyphen and
one
doesn't.
Then
I think
we
could probably resolve that.
Is Ms. Larson here? She always tells us about hyphens. No. Okay, who does hyphens in your staff? The fiscal staff is not allowed to worry about hyphens.
Madam Chair, those aren't hyphens, those are subtraction signs.
Well, that.
It's a minus.
Madam Chair, Mr. Nauman is either playing with me or they're hyphenating and subtracting in different languages.
All right, then. So which one should we do? Is there agreement that one is better than the other one?
I think it's hyphenated.
The correct one is the House, I believe.
Ms. Larson says hyphen, so that's going to have to be it. So who has the hyphen, the Senate or the House? Oh, now she's changing her mind. No, we'll move the Senate language then. So I'll move Article 1, Section 45. Any discussion? We have a hyphen in here. That sounds like it's more proper to me. All right, all in favor? Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Article 1, Section 45, the Senate language is approved.
Madam Chair, next, there is a repealer in both bills. There are two parts of the repealer that are dissimilar, but one part in each repealer is the same, save for the effective date. Minnesota Statutes Section 124D06 is repealed in both bills. The House repeals it on June 30th, 2007, and the Senate waits until July 1st, 2007 to repeal the same provision of statute.
And Madam Chair, what is that provision?
Madam Chair, members, this is an obsolete provision related to the let me just turn back to the summary here so I don't have to be wrong. Related to the open enrollment provision, there was a prior to our regular open enrollment provision, there was a provision in statute for children who were born before 1978 that said that they or their siblings could continue to go to a non-resident school. And the department has concluded that there's no siblings left of children below 1978 that are still in the school system.
Senator Strong, I'm just curious about the decision to repeal it at the end of the fiscal year versus at the beginning of the next. I mean, it is one day difference, but just out of curiosity.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Clark, I have no idea where the House effective date came from. That's kind of an unusual one to have it at June 30th.
That's what I thought.
It sounds like we'll do the Senate one then. Obviously, the consolidated levy and equity simplification, we won't do it because that's another discussion that we have to wait till we resolve that. But the one on the on the page 13, the Senate section 46 repealer. Let's take this paragraph A. Thank you. We'll if there's no discussion on that, I'll move that. And then, is there discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Article 1, section 46, paragraph A is adopted.
Madam Chair, members, I think that concludes Article 1.
All right, and we're going to skip Article 2. That's the one we'll do last because Ms. Larson will be here for that, but not Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow, and we'll move to Article 3.
Madam Chair, members, Article 3 is the special education article. There are a variety of provisions that are identical that have to do with the structure of the program, including the base year, that I believe both the House and Senate are in favor of, but they will tie to funding decisions as well, so you may want to postpone action on those provisions. Madam Chair, if you'd like me just briefly to mention what these are. In Article 1, Sections 1 conforms the definition of special revenue that's used in the pupil transportation statute to the new definition where the base year has been eliminated. Again, I believe both House and Senate want to update the base year 2 years, and you can do whatever funding level at either. So I'm not quite sure how you feel about these, but you may want to hold off until you do all of the funding decisions.
Mr. Strom, I think we will. We'll save on the Article 3 ones and...
Madam Chair, Sections 2 and 3 then have to do with the Transition for Children with Disabilities program. What's being transitioned here are the children. We use that word in other places that's a term for a grandfather, but here this is the name of the program, and these are programs that help children move from the school system to some sort of other living environment. The department recommended, and both the House and Senate accepted the provisions to move these into the regular category of special education funding. Again, even though both are suggesting this has financial differences among school districts.
And Madam Chair, I think that takes us up to Section 4 in the Senate bill. Senator Roebling had an amendment, I think, in the Finance Committee that allowed school districts to offer LEP services at non-public schools. Under current law, services must be offered at either a public school or a neutral site. Madam Chair, Section 4 of the House bill and Section 5 of the Senate bill add the word equalization into definition to clarify that we are talking about referendum equalization aid.
And Madam Chair, the other change in House Article 3, Section 4 was language that was brought to the House very late by the department having to do with the the calculation of the amount that's being transferred. This was a problem that just recently was noticed with districts in northeast Minnesota, where there's essentially some double counting of the sparsity and compensatory before that money gets transferred, and the department was concerned that that double counting would interfere with the uniform tuition billing. So they recommended some language to us. I believe that the language we have here, beginning on lines 104.7 to 104.13, actually is not exactly what the department desires. They'd like something just slightly different. But essentially, what this language tries to do is make sure that the same amounts are being calculated in both the sending and the receiving district and for purposes of making the uniform tuition billing transfers.
And Madam Chair, I can report that I have visited with Senator Stumpf about this provision, and he did not at the time have any issues with it. The Senate bill is already closed and off the floor by the time that this language landed on our email system.
Representative Slawik may want to stay, Madam Chair, for the next provision. I'm sorry.
It's yours. She's trying to get off to her school conference. Yeah.
No, I can wait till 6.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, this is on Article 3, Section 5 of the bill, starting on line 105.4, and has to do with the essentially an open enrollment concept for children who are not yet enrolled in kindergarten. And perhaps Representative Slawik would like to speak to that.
Representative Slawik.
I'm sorry, as I had just gotten up, which section are we talking about?
This is Article 3 now, Section 5. We're on page 53.
Okay.
And this was actually your bill, House File 1196,
yes.
And Senator Scheid's bill.
Yes, this is a bill we've, thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Strom. This is a bill I've carried several years. I was glad to see this included this year. This is for kids, little kids. That have child care in a different district than the school they attend. So say it's a North St. Paul school student that's getting child care in St. Paul, that they can also, but they're a special ed child, that they can get their special ed services in that other district. But the home district would pay for that. So it's already provided up at the elementary school level if that happens, and we just want to extend it down to the pre-kindergarten level.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Section 6.
Madam Chair, members, Section 6 of the bill has to do with changing the word summer school to extended school year program. And I believe this section's the same in the House.
Yes. Madam Chair, this apparently conforms with federal law.
And just for the viewing audience, a lot of times when the House and the Senate have the very same language and it's something fairly technical, quite often we get these provisions from the governor's bill. And I think today is the ones we've been going through are no exception. They're from the Department of Education. And so they're, and then we all agree they're good ideas and adopt them. If they weren't, they wouldn't have made it into both bills. So these are pretty routine, and but often important.
Madam Chair, I believe we could actually do this one. I know we're holding on most of the special ed ones, but this one we could do.
This one we can do. All right. And they're identical, so I'll move the Senate provision. I'll move Article 3, Section 6. Any discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Article 3, Section 6 is adopted.
Madam Chair, members, the next section, Article 3, Section 7, is a requirement for the department to have a statewide hearing loss early education intervention coordinator. Madam Chair, the next section, Section 8, is the same in both the House and Senate and clarifies that when travel aid is being provided for special education personnel to provide home-based services, that they can also claim travel aid when they visit community-based services as well.
Does that one doesn't have any financial implications?
No. I think we could do that one.
Yeah.
All right. If the staff tells us there's nothing financial and they agree, we believe them. So I'll move Article 3, Section 7. Any discussion?
Section 8.
Pardon me?
Section 8, I believe, Madam Chair.
I'm moving the Senate side, so I should have said that. No, that's all right. I apologize. I'll move the Senate language, Section 7, and see Representative Mariani. Then when we go to trade later, I'll say, but the Senate got all these provisions, and so we need ours because we have more provisions than ours, so that's why we have to do it this way.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm quite sure you'll be moving a number of Senate positions in the future, too.
That's probably true. You've got a lot of good ones. Okay, did we vote on that yet or not?
No.
Got me all mixed up. Representative Mariani, did I just move it or didn't I?
You just moved it.
I moved it, but we didn't vote. Okay, all in favor of Article 3, Section 7, say aye.
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 Opposed? Adopted. Article 3, Section 7, Senate language.
Madam Chair, members, the next section has to do with rolling Part C into the regular special education formula. The House and Senate, again, this implicates funding. The House and Senate are in agreement except for whether a comma should follow Part C on 107.9 in the House language. Part C is followed by a comma, and on 60.4 of the Senate language, the comma doesn't exist.
Okay, another one for Ms. Larson. Should we have a comma or not? Mm-hmm. We should have a comma, and who has the comma? The House.
House.
The House. Okay. I will move.
Madam Chair, but that is a financial one.
Oops, financial.
Just
never mind.
Mark that for later.
Madam Chair, members, there's also on that on line 107.9 of the House language, where there is not the word section, and there is the word section on Senate language 60.4.
That's like we're holding on, Madam Chair.
I think so. That's a biggie.
Madam Chair, I think we call that the weeds.
Only because of the money, that's
what I think, Madam Chair, the next Senate provision is where we ought to go next. Section 9 is a reporting mechanism for litigation costs. We previously, I think it was prior to the 2005 session, had a small appropriation for litigation costs, and that was eliminated in the 2005 session, and one of the senators brought this provision to the Education Finance Committee, which was ultimately included in the bill. This requires the department to give us some information consistent with UFARS on how much is spent for litigation costs associated with special education. And then members, I'll continue. Section 10 of both bills continues the update to the current year funding cycle. There is a difference, however. Most of the language on R11 is the same, but it is in this section that the Senate also increases the growth factor for regular special education to 4.6% each year. So after all the pieces are rolled together, the Senate does inflate them at 4.6%.
Now, actually, Mr. Nauman, when I made my statement earlier about there would be no more money because we're just displacing local money with state money, if we added this in here, could you clarify for me, does that mean more money for special education for the types of advocacy people that we're hearing from, or would you consider this just displacing also?
Madam Chair and members, I think the way to think about this is that both the Senate and the House bills do increase the money for special education. The question then becomes how much of the cross-subsidy is essentially bought off. Mm-hmm. Under federal law, special education students are provided services. And if the special ed amounts, the amounts that the state appropriates or that the federal government appropriates is insufficient to pay for those costs, then school districts are required under law to make to somehow find the money. And what's happening, I believe, right now is a lot of districts are taking general education dollars to make those expenditures. So I think we've got a 4.6% growth factor, a little bit more robust than the growth in the House bill. But I think in both cases, what you're doing is freeing up general fund dollars or general education dollars or referendum dollars, depending on the peculiarities of a particular district.
So this, too, just goes into the cross-subsidy.
Madam Chair, I think that's a fair way to think about it.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Nauman, it would also seem, though, that since we recognize that there will be an increase in costs each year, that at least to me the inflation, as it were, is money that's recognized in the increased cost of special education. So, Madam Chair, I would think we could at least be believing that part of it, while it may free up other money, it's an acknowledgement that special ed costs are going to be more next year than they are this year.
Mr. Nauman.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Clark, I think another piece to think about here is that special ed costs are growing at about 4.5% each year, and the Senate bill does a pretty good job of not completely, but fully funding the statutory requirement. Doesn't quite get all the way there, but we do tend to keep pace at a pretty good rate with the special ed cost growth.
Mr. Nauman, how much of the cross subsidy, even with the Senate bill, is about left there? How much more money would we have to spend compared to what you are spending, proposing to spend, would be needed to actually end that gap?
Madam Chair, some of this we talked about yesterday.
And
this
Senator
is sort of the catch-up homework that we were talking about. But yes. if you have in your packets the sorry about this. I had to give mine to Senator Stumpf when he walked through today, so I no longer have mine. But on page 7 of the
need me once in a while instead of the other way around.
Of the of Senator Rummel's presentation, I think is a chart that might be useful. You can see the tracking of the special ed cross subsidy beginning in fiscal year 1999, which I think was the first year we began actually measuring it per se. And you can see that the diamonds represent where the special ed cross subsidy is projected to go out through fiscal year 2011. So it grows from the 323 all the way up to 796. And you can see for many years it was fairly flat as we didn't have caps in place at that time. On the Senate cross subsidy, if you will, drops under projections down to 389. And then it does continue to grow after that, but it is a substantially lower rate. Madam Chair, if you're interested, I could certainly add in perhaps the governor's language or even the House cross-subsidy to see where we might be on those for comparative purposes. I'd be pleased to do that.
I would love to see that. And
okay.
I am sorry that I missed Senator Rummel's presentation.
Madam Chair, I'll bring that for you at the next meeting.
All right. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, I think the next continues again. Both House and Senate, I believe, Mr. Trump, these are both the same. Section 11 in both bills, similar but wording differences. These are updates to the special education base revenues. Both bodies are changing from a two-year lagging reimbursement system to a current year funding system, and perhaps a quicker eye has already identified what the differences are, but it sounds like the basic intent is the same under both bills. And Madam Chair, I think that adequately covers that. Madam Chair and members, Section 12 of the House bill, Section 12 of the Senate bill, set the total regular special education spending. Members will note that there are differences here. This is clearly a fiscal matter that we will need to hold on. This is where the Senate spent the bulk of its money. It's in regular special education. I don't know, Mr. Strom, do you have anything to add here?
Madam Chair, no. I think I would just point out that when we looked at the fiscal worksheets, and we'll talk about this more, as the House put relatively more of its money in the excess cost category, so that there is also some difference distributionally as to whether it's in regular or special ed, and not just on the total dollar amounts.
That's a good point, Madam Chair.
And we made a point to do that because we didn't fund the special ed cross subsidy as well as the Senate did, and so therefore we thought it was fair to, you know, be innovative and put more money into the districts that had the higher costs, because we know that districts that have really good special education programs get more students, like regional centers or some of the suburban districts like mine and Senator Rummel's and others, I'm sure, and then Senator Clark has a regional center, so this is much higher of an increase in the excess cost than we think has been done before. So if we end up compromising on the different positions, we're hoping, and we don't fund the whole cross-subsidy or the significant portions of it like the Senate did,
then this is something to look at as a compromise position, because that was our thinking when we weren't able to fund the whole thing. Kind of a need-based funding, which is consistent throughout our bill. We thought those who have more needs should get more.
And so, Madam Chair, members, now the next section, Section 13 of the House, Section 13 of the Senate, both bills are, both sections are the same. It eliminates the old base funding mechanism. Mm-hmm. Again, this is tied to money, so unfortunately this is not one you can, I think you probably want to adopt just at this time, but they are identical provisions.
Madam Chair, members, Section 14 of the House bill has to do with special education maintenance of effort. This provision was recommended by the governor, although after they initially recommended, they'd prefer it to be uncodified. In circumstances when there is not a growth from year to year in special education funding, there's concern that a maintenance of effort problem could result. This language goes through the process of determining how that maintenance of effort adjustment should be made.
Madam Chair,
Senator Clark,
and Mr. Strom, this is something I think would be interesting to hear more about at some point, to think a little bit about how that fits into the bigger picture. I know that there's some people in my district that are interested in this as well. So. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, members, the next provision, Section 15 of the House, includes transportation services in the definition of unreimbursed special education cost. I'm at a loss to tell you why the House did that. I believe that was a technical change recommended by the governor's bill.
According to my very good notes from Ms. Patrick, yes.
Okay.
Along with the previous one that Senator Clark said her district is interested in, Section 14 was governor's language as well.
And Madam Chair, that may be a case where when the Senate was doing some slightly different approach to some of the drafting, that piece got dropped. We'll visit with Mr. Melcher to make sure that we meant to do that, even though we didn't. But I'll notice that on line 64.34 is the 2% growth factor for excess costs that the Senate included in its language.
Sounds like these will be easy ones to resolve as we go along.
I would think that would be the case, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members, Section 16 is the same in both bills, but relates to the funding, overall special education funding system, and the base year being updated to the current year instead of the second prior year. Section 17 is where the House establishes the special education excess cost amounts. Again, you can see these are higher than current law, but that's because there's less in the regular special education category than the Senate, which is distributionally would have some effects.
And Madam Chair, members, Section 18 of the House bill, Section 17 of the Senate bill clarifies the out-of-state, the definition of general education in the out-of-state tuition statute. These are similar in both bills. There's slight differences. And Madam Chair, Section 19 of the House and Section 18 of the Senate are technical updates to the alternative attendance program statutes, and I think these are the same, Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, yes, it's my understanding these are the same.
They're fiscal or not?
Madam Chair, I don't believe there would be any fiscal impact to this because the department is interpreting that as if, yeah, as if the current law says equalization aid. The issue has to do with the tax-based replacement aid portion of the referendum.
Okay, so I'll move then. Article 3, Section 18, the Senate language. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Article 3, Section 18, the Senate language is approved.
And Madam Chair, the next section is Section 19 of the Senate bill. Members will recall that in the Senate made its special education changes. It began those changes retroactively, had a look back to fiscal year 2007. And members will note that there is a striking on line 68.4, replacing the $528 million with a $652.7 million. The reviser has pulled in the House language, I believe, from the forecast article as a comparison. The policy change on the Senate, the House is not making a policy change, but instead is just updating for the forecast. And that logic would also apply to the Senate Section 20, where we are changing the excess cost amounts, as well as the transition for disabled students. And again, on the left side for the transition for disabled, there's a there's the similar appropriation from the forecast article. And Madam Chair, members, in recent years, we have gone to a new special education tuition billing system, and several school districts are several. There has been some growing pains, and some of the intermediates have asked for some an exemption from that provision, and we gave it to them in fiscal year 2007. And in the Senate language, we asked they came back and received an additional authority for one more year, and that's Section 15 of the Senate language.
And, Madam Chair, the House includes that same exemption the Senate has, but expands upon that a bit, the new language showing up on lines 116.20 to 116.29.
Madam Chair, Section 23 of the Senate bill is some language that the Senate felt was necessary to include. Members will recall that the transition disabled program that we've talked about a little bit already receives an increase in is repealed and rolled into other parts of special education, but in the Senate language we are actually increasing it in fiscal year 2007 to, it seemed a little bit confusing to repeal that statute at the same time we were increasing it, so we carried some uncodified language to clarify to the department what we feel the entitlement for that program should be in fiscal year 2007.
Madam Chair, Section 21 of the House bill is a task force that requires the task force to compare federal and state education, special education requirements. Subdivision 1 establishes the task force, and Subdivision 2 requires the task force to report its results to the legislature by February 15th of 2008.
And I will say about this, this is part of the House special education message. We kind of had a three-prong attack, and you have two of our three prongs. One is, of course, to pay the bill, and then the other one is to have prevention with, like, SPREAD program to try to identify kids, get them help and early, and avoid them being identified in the first place as special ed. And then this is our third component that our caucus likes very much, and it was bipartisanly adopted, I think, unanimously. And Representative Hillstrom's bill, and what this says is that now that IDEA has just been reauthorized, all the statutes and rules that Minnesota has that exceed federal standards will be examined by this joint task force, and they will come forward, and these reports already exist, one for statute and one for rule, and then any place that everyone can come to agreement working with a mediator that we don't need them anymore, then those would be recommended to the legislature next year to sunset and or to get rid of. And there's some angst you may hear from some advocates about this because they worry we're going to get rid of something that they consider important. But the ones I've actually sat down and talked with, I said, you know, two things. One, either we'll all agree that they do need to be gotten rid of, in which case then it makes our case stronger that what we are still doing is, you know, very important. Or if nothing is gotten rid of, ditto with that statement for everything. So I think it behooves everybody to be willing to always examine what are we doing to either confirm that it's needed or to get rid of what's not needed, and then what's left is much stronger. So hopefully we can convince you eventually to include that.
Madam Chair, I know that Senator Robertson did a lot of work on that while mm-hmm. she was here. It sounds like you're thinking that we may be a little out of sync again.
Exactly. In fact, that when Senator Robertson did that, I was the Senate author of that, and or Senate author, the House author. We're over here in the Senate. I'm getting confused. And the House author, and then and it was contentious then as well. But we did that with the and then IDEA was reauthorized right after it, and we were very discouraged that we got rid of a lot of unnecessary paperwork and meetings in Minnesota, some that the parents did not want to go to, but, you know, the law said they had to, and it was just really nonsensical. So we did all that. We were proud to say we streamlined special ed, and then the IDEA was adopted, and they piled on, and the net effect was there was even more paperwork than there was before we did it. So we kind of got buried, and we never got any credit for that work. But now, this time, being smarter and wiser, this is to look at it right after IDEA has been adopted so that that same thing wouldn't happen again. And I did notice, maybe some of you did too, that we just got a notice today that the department is going into rulemaking. They have their sonar already, and they're giving it out, and they are also looking at getting rid of some obsolete rules. So that would have to be taken into account too, which we did not take into account when we adopted this language.
Madam Chair, then come the appropriations in both bills, which I think we can skip, and then the repealers. The repealers are kind of intertwined. There is one repealer that is not specifically related to the funding needs, and that's 125A10. I'm not sure, given the way that the repealer sections are written differently, if you'd like to hold off on that. Otherwise, that's the only one of the repealers that's not connected to the funding issues.
Okay, let's see now. So that would be...
Madam Chair, why don't we just hold on that?
Hold on that one. Okay.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, that brings us to Article 4, which is the Facilities and Technology article.
Madam Chair, in Sections 1, 2, 3, and 4, the Senate expands the Cooperative Secondary Facilities Grant Act to all facilities within the cooperatives, and then it expands it also to districts that have consolidated. There was another portion of this bill that went to the bonding, so this into the bonding bill, and so this is actually just the language associated with that. So without that appropriation, there is not any funding.
Okay, we're at a standstill while the chairs are talking. Is there something we're supposed to be doing? Or are they here just deciding who's next?
Under Section 5 of the Senate and Section 1 of the House, this is corrects a statutory cross-reference. And then the Senate also on 7724 makes a correction for the or an adjustment for a portion of the Job Z to align all the Job Z for operating referendum versus debt service.
Madam Chair, members, the next section in the House bill then is Section 2, having to do with the debt service equalization program. Under the current statute, that program has three tiers. The first 15% of debt is paid all locally. The amount between 15 and 25% is equalized at $3,200, and the amounts above 25% are equalized at $8,000. The House eliminates the three-tier system, goes back to just a local share, and one tier beyond that, where the equalization starts at 15%, so that the amounts over 15% are all equalized, and the amounts under 15% are entirely local. Section 3 then sets that equalization factor and replaces the $3,200 equalizing factor with an amount that's based on the state average. This is set at 100% of the statewide adjusted net tax capacity per pupil unit, which is about $6,900 per pupil. So instead of having two tiers, one at $3,200 and the other at $8,000, the House goes to a tier that's equalized at $6,900. Madam Chair, Section 4 then is the appropriation, the fixed standing statutory appropriation for the debt service equalization program. The House increases the appropriation from its current level to about $26 million for fiscal year 2009 and to $29 million for fiscal year 2010. This part of the appropriation is designed to match the changes in the equalizing factor that we just discussed. And then the second change that's made is that in the next section, the school bond agricultural credit is created. And this credit, which offsets a portion of the tax for farm property, is put in statute as a fixed standing appropriation as well and starts out as a $10 million fixed standing appropriation.
And the Senate in that section just sets the statutory appropriations for fiscal years 2010 and 2011 according to the forecast.
Madam Chair, Section 5 of the House
bill. We have a question. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, does Mr. Crow have any breakout of the numbers of district affected by this particular, the equalized debt service levy?
Mr. Crow.
The metro rural, or do you have comparable numbers to what you gave us with the referendum one? Or could you search that out?
We'll search it out, and we'll return when he gets it.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, while Mr. Crow is looking that up, the debt service equalization aid and the ag credit were part of that joint decision-making process with the House Tax Committee. In terms of the dollars of the distribution of that, they primarily go to Greater Minnesota. The non-metro share of the ag credit's about $9 million. With about $1 million in the metro area for the ag credit. And then on the increased debt service equalization aid, about $10 million of that goes to Greater Minnesota and about $2 million of that goes to the metro area. There are just a couple of metro area districts that benefit by the enhanced debt equalization, but they both benefit fairly substantially.
Who are those two, Mr.
Centennial and Farmington, Madam Chair, are the two primary beneficiaries.
I don't consider Farmington metro.
Madam
but
Chair,
I'm sure
we,
they do.
Centennial?
No, Farmington. Yeah. Oh, Centennial.
Agriculture?
Madam Chair, the number I was just speaking about, the $2 million is for the enhanced debt equalization, which is not based on the nature of the property. In terms of the ag credit portion of that, the $900,000 that's in the metro area, we'll have to do a quick search for which districts those are, but I would suspect that they are the Carver County districts that are primarily the ones that are getting the portion of the $1 million of the ag credit that's in the metro area.
So, Madam Chair,
Mr.
Strong, does that takes into account any property that is zoned agriculture?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Olson. Yes, the way the credit works is the district determines the level of debt that they've got, and then the ag property essentially gets a credit for 23% of the amount of tax they'd otherwise pay for that.
Okay.
So, for example, if the farmer were to have a $10,000 bill due to the school building project, 23% of that would be paid by the state credit, and the farmer's taxes would be reduced by that same amount.
This was a very something that our Greater Minnesota people were very proud of. This was Representative Swigum was the author of one of these bills.
Madam Chair. On the ag credit, the bulk of that $900,000 is going to Northfield, which is counted as a metro school because of the location of its district offices. New Prague, Roseville gets $160.
Right.
Farmington. And I'm trying to find the Waconias. Yeah, Waconia, Watertown, Mayor, and Chaska.
So it's a stretch to say it's many metro districts really get much out of it. But we all, people like me, strongly supported this provision because I was convinced that because it's need-based, and that's my favorite type of funding, is when there is a need, I like the money to go there kind of directly and not so spread out that it doesn't do any good. And this one goes right to the districts that really need it, and it didn't cost a ton either, but yet it did a lot of good because a lot of these are smaller districts. Representative Heidgerken, I know, did you want to add anything? I know you strongly
supported
it. I think
you covered it pretty good. Representative Demmer carried the bill, and it's something that they worked out. Representative Welty was very involved in it as well, but they worked in the background. And what brought this to the light is that there's been some school districts out there that have failed to build needed buildings because of the issue with some of the farmers were just getting hammered on it, and they couldn't pass the referendums because of it. So,
Madam Chair, the next section in the House bill is House Section 6 that has to do with the treatment of alternative facilities revenue under the health and safety program. Essentially what this is doing is moving it out of the debt service category and into the health and safety revenue category for purposes of equalization.
And Madam Chair, this is the same in the House and the Senate, and I don't believe there is a fiscal cost associated with this.
Madam Chair, that's correct. No districts currently qualify for equalization on, that receive the alternative facilities under either the debt service program or the health and safety program.
Okay, and we're out of Article 3, and we're in Article 4. So Article 4, I'll move the Senate language Section 7 for the health and safety revenue. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Article 4, Section 7, the Senate language is adopted.
Madam Chair and members, in House Section 7 and Senate Section 8, the language in the ballot is changed so that it says that it's not to exceed 10 years. No, I don't believe that any capital project levies have exceeded that amount, so it's just a clarification. There is one change with the House language that it does have an effective date.
You're thinking if they want us to do this one, Senator Clark, or wait.
I can tell, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I don't believe there is a cost associated with this, so I think we could probably adopt the
House language. All right. So I will move Article 4, House Language, Section 7. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Motion prevails, and Article or Section 7, House Language, is adopted.
Madam Chair, in Section 9 of the Senate bill, there is in the information required when a school district goes to the commissioner to get approved for a new building, included in that list of what should be required from the commissioner, the Senate included a description of how a facility will use energy conservation measures in this list of information.
Call that.
Take a break here.
The House is under call, so I'll leave it to Senator Clark if she wants to keep going, or if you're just getting information, if you want to take a recess, if we don't get back in time, feel free.
What? Members, I think it might be, why don't we take about a 10-minute recess, and we'll see how long it'll be. My guess is some people could use a short break.
Sure.
Let's be back at 4:35.